So before we start the episode, just a quick show note. We have a giveaway of a $50 Amazon gift card. Actually, two $50 Amazon gift cards. So if you enjoy the podcast, Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn Podcast, just go to my most recent episodes. In the last few most recent episodes, like episode 221 and 220 and so forth, go to the show notes and you will see their links and instructions on the giveaway for the card. So basically the way it works is just give this podcast, Alpha Male Buddhist, a 5-star review and you qualify for a $50 giveaway. I will pick the top 2 5-star reviews and each of the 2 winners, which I decide on, will get a free Amazon $50 gift card emailed to them with the number and such, and you can just purchase something on Amazon and put those numbers in. All the reviews must be posted on or before September 30th, 2024, so you still have about 2 weeks. Winners will receive their gift card right around October 1st of 2024, so in a couple of weeks. If the podcast app does not allow you to give a 5-star review, then just simply type in the words 5 stars for the Alpha Male Buddhist podcast in the app player comment box. Some of them, there's 1 or 2. I think Spotify doesn't let you give 5 stars, but you can type comments. So just type in 5-star. Or you might be able to put 5-star in Spotify. I'm not sure. You'd have to go through and check it out because it changes so fast. Really, the podcast catch apps that really allow you to do that are going to be the Apple Podcast, which is all of these links are in the show note description. Links you could click and it'll take you right to my show where you can leave the 5-star review. So it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, CastBox, Podchaser, and Good Pods. Again, in order for you to win the contest, I need to actually see the 5-star 5-star review or the 5-star in the comments. I must be able to see it, you know, on my end, on the podcast apps, in order for you to qualify for that gift card. So yeah, go check out the show notes. The links are all there. Just click them, go right through. If you have any questions about the contest, my email address is alphamalebuddhist@gmail.com. So just reach out and I'll kind of give you a little guidance with regard to that. So do want to thank you for listening and let's get them 5-star reviews coming in and get a chance, actually 2 chances of winning a $50 Amazon gift card. So check it out. Each contestant is only eligible to win 1 gift card. You cannot enter and win both gift cards. So go check it out.
When I whet my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will take vengeance upon mine enemies, and I will repay those who hate me. O Lord, raise me to thy right hand and count me among thy saints.
It has come to our attention that a mysterious force is loose somewhere in outer space.
The mysteries of creation are there.
Up in the sky?
Up in the sky.
The moon and the planets are there. And new hopes for knowledge and peace are there.
Even if a samurai's head were to be suddenly cut off, he should still be able to perform 1 more action with certainty.
I gotta get in shape now. Too much sitting has ruined my body. Too much abuse has gone on for too long. From now on, it'll be 50 push-ups each morning, 50 pull-ups. There'll be no more pills. There'll be no more bad food. No more destroyers of my body. From now on, it'll be total organization. Every muscle must be tight.
You're really gonna tell me you don't get it yet? You don't fucking get it yet. I've been in the greatest place mentally, in prison, in the SHU, with nothing but my personal development process, and I was completely living in a high frequency, high vibration state where my life was great in those moments that I cultivated that high-frequency mindset. Now, obviously, law of polarity, you have to experience lows. Accept them, and then know how to get yourself back up high. It can't be a high that comes with a low. it has to just be high and low frequency due to actual stimulus that takes place inside yourself. It cannot be external stimulus. It cannot be. It has to be thoughts, actions, and energy. And these actions are only ones that a human can partake in by self. It cannot be the consumption of vices, cannot be the consumption of certain things that cause stimulus to take effect to put you in an elated state which has an eventual down. Can't be anything like that. No drugs, no alcohol, no fucking bullshit. You possess everything within you, and the tools already come, you already come equipped with the tools to put yourself in a high frequency state. Now the problem is everyone freaks out when they get back into a low frequency state. I don't even address it. I know what it is. It's just a temporary place, a contraction phase, and an expansion is imminent. An expansion is as imminent as we want it to be. You can step right into an expansion phase when you understand how to get yourself there.
Welcome back to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. This is your host, Miguel. Today we have a distinguished guest. His name is Alex Pekas, and he has a PhD in Greek classics, which is pretty amazing. So, Alex, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Miguel. Great to be here today. I'm a former academic. Like you said, I did a PhD in classics. I was teaching in universities for a while, and I eventually left. I had a tenure track job, and so I was, had the cushy thing that everybody covets in academia. But I left in 2020 because I felt like, well, for a lot of reasons, but it kind of came down to the fact that I loved the classics so much, and they had such an impact on me as a young man, as a troubled young man, which I'll maybe get into in a moment. And I felt like the whole discipline, the whole, the university system, the colleagues that I would see at the conferences, there was this general consensus that this stuff should be kept out of the hands of young men, sort of. It's very ironic, but that was the vibe, that that if you want to spread the wisdom and the strength that you can draw from the Greeks and the Romans, that makes you sort of like a fascist or something. And it's,
sorry to laugh. Yes, but very true.
But it's sad but true. It's we can say it now and it's hilarious. But in 2019 it was, you couldn't say that, and now I think people know what you're talking about. I left. It was really tragic to me, because to get into my own personal story a little bit, I grew up in Texas. I went to a public school, and my parents were divorced, and my dad was away trying to build a business a lot. And I didn't feel like I had a lot of strong role models pointing me to what kind of man I should be. And I got into stuff like, I played video games a ton, and I got really overweight and did terribly in school. I was sleeping through classes. Yeah, typical stuff for like a teenager in a, big public school and kind of quasi suburbia. I mean, it wasn't really suburbia. It was like a real mixture of people, of like the very poor kids, the very rich kids, kind of typical Texas big public school. I decided I wanted to get my life in order at some point. I was 17. I got a crush on a girl, and I was like, wow, no girl is ever going to want to be with a guy like me. How am I going to fix this? And we had some books in my house. We had a copy of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, and I started reading that. We had Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, which is actually based on a lot of ancient wisdom. And I started to get, and we also had the Bible. I started reading the Bible and kind of getting back into the church that I was raised in. And, I started to kind of see books, especially ancient books, old books, as having something they could teach me finally. I wasn't really in that mindset until I was in my late teens, and I really felt like I craved guidance and answers. And that's how I really got into the ancient philosophy, the Greeks and the Romans. I eventually ended up pursuing that in college and doing a PhD against probably my better judgment, you know, respect, following the academic path.
That's good. That's a big achievement.
Yeah, but you know, Princeton. Yeah, I ended up going to Princeton for the PhD. Ivy League. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when they tell you that if you get into an Ivy League school, they'll pay you to go to school instead of you having to pay them, because you know you get this little graduate stipend to complete your PhD studies, and then they're like, oh, well, then you can have this cushy job at the end. You can be a professor and have all this distinguished respect. And so I was very allured by that. And you know, it's a comfortable, well, it used to be a comfortable life. I think the universities are going through a crisis right now, but you know, comfort can be a problem, as we know, from the Romans themselves, who would be the first to tell us that comfort kills. So anyway, that's kind of my backstory of how I got into academia, into classics, and into ancient wisdom, and why I got out of it. And now I am got into entrepreneurship. I was working in a family business for a while, and now I'm full time on this podcast that I've started called The Cost of Glory, which is basically me sharing the greatest stories from antiquity that I find the most inspiring. They're mostly biographies of the greatest Greek and Roman leaders. And I'm basing it on a particular ancient philosopher named Plutarch, and maybe we can get into him.
I know the name Plutarch. I know the name. He wrote history, or
yeah,
like Herodotus type.
Well, so yeah, Plutarch would be a guy that, you know, a podcaster like Dan Carlin would cite a lot, or Mike
Carlin's
Duncan.
The man,
yeah,
Carlin's
yeah,
the man.
Carlin's definitely a you know, a role model for me. I really admire his work, and so Plutarch is one of the ancient historians like Herodotus, like Thucydides, like Sallust. But Plutarch is sort of unlike most of the ancient historians. He started his career, and well, for all of his career, really, he was a philosopher. He's a follower of the teachings of Plato and Aristotle, Plato in particular, but also Aristotle, though he lives 3 or 4 centuries after them. He's living in the first century AD. So around the time of the Roman emperors, the early Roman emperors. And but he kind of came upon this realization from, I think he got this both from Plato and Aristotle, that, okay, in order to live a good life as a man, as anybody, you need to concentrate on being virtuous, and virtue for the Greeks is, of course, it's not just like, you know, being a nice guy, like virtue signal. It's about excellence. It's about full expression of your character. But the best way to do that, the best way to inculcate that in yourself, is through imitation, through finding really strong examples of virtue.
Archetype maybe?
Historical characters and mythological characters through archetypes, and through, you know, learning from the greats. I think archetypes are a big part of that. So Plutarch really focused on telling biographies, and he tells these stories they're sort of bite-sized, like an average Plutarch biography of a great figure. I mean, he does Alexander the Great, Caesar, Cicero, Pericles, Fabius Maximus, people that you might have heard of.
Diogenes? No, just joking.
He tells some stories about Diogenes. He doesn't do a proper biography of him. You know, another great guy.
I love Diogenes, by the way.
Yeah,
I love him.
Well, and philosophers like Diogenes will appear as characters in Plutarch biographies. Like Plato the philosopher is a character in the life of Dion, who's a buddy of Plato's, this Syracusan general. Socrates is a character in the life of Alcibiades. So you meet a lot of the great personalities from antiquity through the biographies of Plutarch. Now, but they're, you know, like 30, 40, 50 pages usually. They're like bite-sized. You know, a normal person can read them. And, you know, if you just are willing to look up a few things on Wikipedia, you can read through them. But basically his idea was, okay, study these biographies and, I, Plutarch, am going to help you look for the traits of virtue and vice in these men. Even the best man will have some vices. Even the worst man will have some virtues. emulate the virtues, avoid the vices, learn from their successes and their failures. And that's going to be, that was his kind of gift to the world, I think, as a philosopher. And he's, you know, he's a great storyteller too. He was one of the most popular authors really in all history, from the Renaissance on through the 18th and 19th century. He was just a bestseller. He's like number two most popular ancient author in all of the American colonies in the 18th century. I mean, right after the Bible, like everybody has Plutarch on their shelf. They know this is how you get to know the great heroes of Greece and Rome. And so that's, I'm trying to kind of, I love his spirit and I love what he does. And I want,
He speaks to you.
He speaks to me. And I think that he speaks to a lot of people in our day because we've lost this tradition. Like Plutarch went out of fashion in the late 19th century. People wanted to get all scientific with history, which, you know, I respect, but like you kind of, I think the main point of history is because it fortifies us. It makes us stronger. It makes us wiser. It makes us more courageous.
Right.
And Plutarch really just leans into that power of history with his storytelling.
You know, interesting. From that whole discourse, what you just said, I mean, I was able to relate pretty much to everything that you're saying. And what you're saying with yourself in your early life, I guess you grew, was your dad, I don't want to get real personal, but was your dad really involved in your earlier life or to a limited degree or?
Yeah, I mean, he was never sort of gone, but, you know, he didn't. So it's interesting, like my dad's own father, he had kind of rare for his age, his parents had gotten divorced when he was really young. And so he would see his dad on the weekends and his dad was working a lot building an oil business. But then his father, when he's 13 years old, it's like this crucial moment in a young man's life. His dad gets on a plane and it crashes. And my dad was going to actually join him on that plane to go on one of his business trips from Houston to Dallas. And the plane just, the wing flew off and it crashed in a field and everybody died. And so, you know, he lost his dad like right as he's becoming a man. And I think that he sort of suffered from a lack of a father figure in his own way. Okay. So I have a lot of grace with him. And, you know, I just, you know, he wasn't like telling me this is how you succeed in life. This is what you got to do, Alex. You got to toughen up. I don't know. It just wasn't really part of our relationship.
The reason I say that, though, is because what I was hearing you say about yourself, something I was able to relate to, was that you looked into the classics as a vehicle to kind of transcend your current time situation and to elevate yourself through reading.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, your dad was your dad and he was doing his thing. But you wanted more, you know, you felt you needed more because at a younger age, you recognized the need for that. And you were able to get that knowledge through yourself, through reading, which is something I try to really emphasize to my listeners on the podcast, is you have to invest in yourself and nothing good comes easy. You know what I'm saying? And I do a simple analogy of a punching bag. You know, you're hitting a punching bag, hitting a punch of, or whatever. One day that bag is going to, that wall is going to give, that limitation is going to give. And you have to look for the different angles and multidimensional thinking and everything like that. But those classics and those readings are, because I find a lot of similarities between Stoicism and Eastern philosophy. Certainly. I'm not sure how, well, you mentioned Marcus Aurelius. And basically, whatever doesn't benefit you, don't put your energy into it. And it says the same thing in the Tao. I mean, they're really, really similar, you know? Like, don't get involved in your feelings, pattern recognition, timing, and, you know, and Musashi, Book of Five Rings, he says to, you know, to know the way in one thing is to know the way in a million. And as a doctor, I'm sure you understand that. So I find it to be very interesting. I mean, I was watching a couple of, one specific interview that you were doing, and I watched the whole thing. It was like an hour. I watched the whole thing and I'm like, I'm nodding. I'm like, yeah, we need this today because there's less and less of us today, Alex.
Yeah.
Less and less of us. So I interrupted. I'm sorry.
No, and something you said really, really resonated because, you know, I so many of my friends, even who are men, done PhDs in classics, who are kind of in this field with me, you know, they had issues, but their dad wasn't necessarily there like they wanted to be. And I think that that's, you know, we can have some grace with even with our with sort of the dads who are not there. And but also, like, even if you had a dad who was very present, like, you know, it takes a village to raise a young man. And the ancients have been that for so many generations. That's kind of why we pass down stories of heroes, because men need to be fortified by so many examples of great, strong men. I mean,
like so many other men. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the initiation rituals is not about your dad taking you out in the forest. It's about the men of the tribe, like all of them, accepting you into their company. And if you can't find that locally, then the ancients can be that for you. They can serve that purpose. I had a
100%.
I run these retreats, and I had a young guy. He's like late 20s. He's like a salesman, software salesman, and he they're men's retreats, and we talk about the ancient art of oratory, public speaking, which is a big thing that you get from the Greeks and Romans. And he said, you know, I kind of discovered late in my 20s the Greeks and the Romans. Nobody ever told me about these guys. These are the greatest men that ever lived. Like, how did nobody ever share this stuff with me?
They were crazy too, but they were good.
Yeah, there's some real characters. So, you know, I think that we need to get back to that. And it's not like we're antiquarians. We're trying to live powerful lives now and look to the future. And I always think you look as far back into the past as you want to look into the future. Mm-hmm. For people wanting to build legacies.
The best stuff is the old stuff.
Yeah. Test of time all that. Yeah.
For me, Book of Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Psalms. A father, a young man, read Proverbs, read the Book of Ecclesiastes. Psalms is good because it has nuggets of wisdom and little gems, you know. But the Book of Proverbs, dude, and then the Book of Ecclesiastes. I mean, a person like yourself really is much needed today because of the fact that we're being fed. It's like somebody went up, let's say that you have reality and it's coming through 110 volt into your outlet, and then we're plugged into reality. Somebody came a few years ago and unplugged us from reality. And what we're giving now is a narrative that is not just a narrative, but what it is, it's a net that they're throwing over us to pull us into a one world government. I'm just going to speak honestly. I don't know your audience, but I'm speaking for myself. maybe you're high-fiving me inside, but they're giving us this narrative so that we lose touch of who we are. And in order to find out who we are and how to express our lives and ourselves, we have to look in a book or an app or have somebody explain to us how that's done, as opposed to, like you just said, going back into the classics, building our knowledge of self, building our knowledge, because really the classics also, it talks about the nature of man and his tendencies and his inclinations and how he dealt with different problems, his all that stuff. And they took that away from us, man. And, well, the way I look at it is we allowed them to take it away from us.
Yeah.
Right? Because it all comes down to choice, and we're choosing to be stupid.
Yeah. And, you know, it really is, it's a tragedy. And I think this, like, there are books on this, how, you know, in the late 19th century, the progressives come in to the usual education system of the West, which is very focused
Frankfurt School.
Well, yeah,
you can cut that out if you want.
No. So it's first, it's the progressives like Dewey and Charles, what's his face, one of these influential presidents of Harvard, saying, oh, we don't need the classics. We need to, like, teach people trades. Let's have a Darwinian.
What year?
This is like late 19th century, late 1800s.
Okay.
They take away the requirement for Greek and Latin to get into Harvard and Yale. And even though that seems kind of silly and arbitrary, that meant a lot, actually, because it, you know, making young men learn Greek and Latin before they, at least like a smattering before they enter serious schooling, you know, kind of set a bar that, you know, you have to have some kind of respect or familiarity with your cultural tradition, you know, because it's not just about the ancient Greeks, and the Bible's written in the modern, the New Testament is written in ancient Greek, mm-hmm. and the Old Testament's in Hebrew, of course, and they did a lot of Hebrew too. Latin is the language of scholarship. So I don't know, like we lost that connection. It was severed by American progressives, who you might call kind of center left today. But then once that groundwork is laid, then the Frankfurt School and the people like Marcuse come in, you know, fleeing Germany in the 1930s. And they're like, oh, this is going to be easy. We'll just take over the institutions. These are the neo-Marxists.
Give me for laughing. Yeah. Forgive me.
Yeah. Well, and they talked about their plan in public journals. They said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take over the institutions. We're going to start with the universities. And then once we capture the universities and the teaching colleges, like Columbia teaching colleges, then we'll get all the teachers on board, and then we'll control the ideology of the K-12 schools. And pretty soon, you know, you get our modern education system, which we know what kind of messages you get in a modern education mm-hmm. system, but
Common Core and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's very uninspiring. It's not a surprise to me that I slept through most of my history and English classes when I was in high school, even though, like, look at me now, I'm a total history nut. It's because it wasn't taught to me in a very appealing way. So I think one of the key elements that they excised as though it were a tumor.
Mm-hmm.
So Aristotle talks about this particular emotion that's very powerful. I think of it as the heroic drive emotion, and he calls it zeal or zelos, which is this Greek word that kind of has relationship to boiling. But basically he says zeal is, and this is where we get the modern word zeal, actually. Zelos. It's where we get the word zealot. Let me describe it. I keep talking about it. Zeal is a type of pain felt when a man sees present in another man things good and honorable, which he himself is capable of attaining. It's that boiling inside, probably in your midriff area, when you see somebody doing something great. And instead of saying, ah, I hate that guy, I want to destroy him, you say, ah, I can do that too. And
Could we call that testosterone, or is that oversimplifying? To me, because that's what differentiates men from women, is that to me, a real man, he's going to say, well, wow, this guy's really got a really, you know, nice bike for his, you know, I don't know. But Zelos, I like the etymology. I'm digging it. I interrupted. I'm sorry.
No, I think it's a particularly, it's an emotion particularly characteristic of men. That's true. And Aristotle says it's particularly characteristic of youth. It's like a youthful emotion that old men who are comfortable and set in their ways will often look at the upcomers with a sense of envy, with, like, you know, wanting to knock down people who are challenging them. But the youth is all about striving and matching. And this is like it's the competitive emotion, but it's also the emotion that makes us look to the great heroes of the past and say, I want to be like Hercules. I want to be like Achilles. I want to be like the archetypes I see in mythology or the great commanders I read about in history. And so Plutarch, basically his whole project of telling the biographies of, you know, Alexander the Great's secretary, this pencil pusher who becomes a warlord, Eumenes of Cardia, one of my favorite characters. Countless stories like this. It's all about finding different ways that you can see yourself, that your future self, in these characters and try to emulate them, try to make mm-hmm. the best version of yourself through that yep. kind of steamy feeling you feel somewhere around your midriff area, I think.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, I could tell, it's funny, but I find myself really mirroring a lot of, you know, I love the classics, the Greek classics, and I have crazy respect if you could speak Latin, you know, like I joke with my, I'm married 40 years, you know, but I joke with my wife and I say to her, you know, I'm studying and I'm going to get to the point where I'm going to just speak exclusively in Latin, but then I'm not going to get anywhere because nobody's going to understand me. But Latin is like just, yeah. It's craziness. You know, we went to the Colosseum to Rome and you see the arches. I don't know, but the way they wrote, they have no spaces, right?
Yeah.
They just write in blocks. And I'm looking at it, the arch of Tito and whatever, the different arches right there. And I just, I don't know, my last name, well, I just said what my last name is, but I have a feeling that I have some kind of direct genetic ties back to that time.
Yeah.
Because I kind of feel it, man. When I remember seeing the Colosseum and I was like, wow, you know? And the same feeling also when I saw, what was that, in the Louvre, when I saw Winged Victory, you know, I'm looking, and my wife says, are you okay? I'm like, if I have to explain it to you, you don't get it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It hit me, you know? But yeah, the points you bring up, I mean, are something that especially young men need to get integrated with because of video. You know, I never got into gaming because as a kid, I would play games and I'd be sitting there and trying to learn everything like that. And I remember like the second day of doing it or the third day, I got up and I'm like, my world was still the same. Like all of that effort and thinking that I put into that, I didn't get a return on investment.
Yeah. You know?
And then the other thing is the diminishing return where I didn't see any return. And it was just all diminishing, you know? So I said, forget the gaming. And I started reading books. But, you know, I think we share a very similar message in that. How can I explain it? What you're embodying is something that needs to be put out there and needs to be integrated into the thinking of young people. And that's not happening because it's all Instagram. And I don't want to get into this whole, because I'm a boomer, you know, I'm an older guy. But I don't want to get into that whole, you're minded. Like now try to buy a house. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, it hit me a few years ago, but I would say to my friends or people, oh, you just got to bear down. And I'm like, no, it's a different world now. It's a completely different world. And that's even more of a reason to get your act together, man, and understand. But it's weird. You know, I was born in 1959 and I've seen the world, you know, this whole time frame of what people go through in existence. And it's funny, I talk to people younger than me and I say, you know, they don't understand what I'm saying. Like they don't know. I remember JFK getting shot in the head. I was 3 years old and everybody around me was crying and everything.
Wow.
And you're generally like, you don't get that. I think it's an advantage. Not really, because a lot of people from my generation, they're just stupid. I'll be honest with you. I keep my, from the Eastern philosophy, I keep my mind flexible. Okay.
Mm.
And thinking, but the message that you're bringing is something that not only are the younger people not following it, they don't know it exists, which is even worse. You know, if they knew it existed and their choice was not to pursue that or look into it, that would be cool because it's their choice. But they don't even have that. Well, they do have the choice. They can pick up a book. But there's a whole gray area. Like, they're so brainwashed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's true. And you know, the whole project to gut Western and particularly American education, it really worked.
Yeah.
But the fact that it worked shows you that if you have a game plan, you could undo that. It would take several generations of work. I think that I do get a little bit of encouragement when I'm on Twitter and online. There seems to be a kind of growing grassroots movement among especially young men to say, hey, the Greeks and the Romans are freaking awesome. Like, we need to get back to studying the great men of the past. And I think that people often don't know where to turn to start, and they just start wherever seems best to them. And like, that's great. One of the things that I really like about Plutarch is, Ralph Waldo Emerson, great American author.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little woo-woo, but I think he's got a lot of good things to say.
Mm-hmm.
He said, he kind of modeled his career after Plutarch, actually. He says this. He's an essayist, a moralist. But he says, Plutarch, he doesn't use this exact terminology, but he kind of describes Plutarch as a gateway drug for Greece and Rome because it's so digestible. He says Plutarch is a Bible for heroes. It's like you can
I like that.
Well, you can read the hard ancient authors like Thucydides or even Homer. It can be kind of bracing. It's like a splash in a cold bath. Maybe you want to go right there. But Plutarch is just so easy to get into if you focus on, like, go read the biography of Alexander the Great and Plutarch. Go read, or you know, listen to my series on some of the heroes that he's done already.
What is your podcast? The Cost of Glory. The Cost of Glory.
Yeah, I'll try podcast. To say that a few times to make sure everybody knows.
You're on all the platforms?
I'm on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I'm on YouTube.
Substack? You have a Substack? Or
I do have a Substack, yeah. Cost of Glory. Okay. Twitter, at Cost of Glory.
Okay. Got to check you out.
Yeah, but so... So Emerson says, well, you know, for every, okay, maybe there are greater historians than Plutarch. Maybe Thucydides is like a deeper thinker about history. But for every 100 readers of Plutarch, there's like one reader of Thucydides
in his day. I've heard Thucydides. What is his thing now?
He's a great author, a challenging one. He wrote the History of the Peloponnesian War, which is the great war between between Athens and Sparta. Socrates lived through that war.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you pick it up, it's hard reading because he's just a really smart guy, a really deep thinker, and he doesn't water down for you. But Plutarch can be a way to kind of ease into those authors. And Nietzsche, who's kind of having a comeback of his own today.
Love Nietzsche.
Fantastic writer.
If I may.
Sure, sure.
You need to, okay? Thus Spoke Zarathustra, the prologues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I've come, man, wow. He says, I've come to you every day, you know, whatever, with my serpent and my eagle, and you've given to me your, that, like, dude. But most people are not going to understand that.
Yeah.
But.
He's got some more approachable works. One of the ones that I like a lot is he's got this essay. It's a little harder to find. It's called, it's an essay in a greater collection called Untimely Meditations. The particular essay is on the uses and abuses of history. And he wrote this kind of earlier in his career when he's still a professor before he gets chased out by the bureaucrats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he says, that basically the most important kind of history is what he calls monumental history. There's a couple of different kinds. There's the kind of history where you're like collecting oddities, antiquarian history, where you're, you know, like who built the local bridge at my castle. And, you know, it's nice to have that information. There's going to be some guy who nerds out about it and puts it in a local history book. Then there's the critical history, which maybe you would say is what Daryl Cooper was doing on Tucker Carlson the other night. You know, like the challenging the narrative. Yeah,
he's good.
He's a great example of critical history put very powerfully. He's rewriting the narrative of events that are kind of accepted dogmas. And then there's another history that Nietzsche says is the most important, which is monumental history, which is the kind of history where men of action look back trying to find other examples of men with the same spirit to prove that men can do things as great as they are imagining themselves doing, to kind of lift your ambition, to lift your moral horizons higher. And he says Plutarch is the prime example of that. He says in that treatise, satisfy your souls on Plutarch.
Wow.
And a generation raised on his heroes who have become accustomed to the heroic could do away with the whole noisy pseudo education of our day and age. So he sees, you know, monumental history, particularly these kind of heroic biographies, as a way to kind of counterbalance against the, you know, facts and figures, memorize these dates, and I don't know. There's just a really uninspiring version of history that you can be fed in schools. It's the kind of stuff that I certainly slept through.
I can remember, I don't know, maybe there actually was a, I saw a, oh, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I saw the quote.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, Nietzsche, I know the name. I says, you know, this is maybe 4 years ago when I was into my podcasting. And if you go through my episodes, I try to put real substantive, authors, speakers, and topic lines, you know. And I'm like, who's this guy? What's this guy about, you know? And I ran in, you know, Thus Spoke Zarathustra. I saw a podcast titled Thus Spoke Zarathustra. I forget the guy's name. It's amazing. It's still out there because I was listening to it the other day. And I'm listening to him get into the whole prologues and the guy on the wire and the whole thing. My mind was blown, man, because I would get into the Eastern philosophy, the Dharmapada, which is the words of Buddha, the Upanishads, like Eastern philosophy, all of these different things like that. But in seeing Nietzsche, I just discovered like the Western version of that.
Yeah.
In a sense, because I didn't get too deep into the Western method. For some reason, I was drawn to the Eastern. And a quick note, I was probably 11 years old and Puerto Rican. So when I grew up, there was a lot of the Santeria and all this devil worship. And so it was weird stuff, man. And I didn't quite know how to settle that in my own head, like the whole witchcraft and everything like that. Because like in our culture, like you'll see it happen. Like they'll go to battle and like the other person will die or something. Like, and I think a lot of that is in your mind, because if you're in that pool, in that frequency, then you'll be affected by it because you're left to protect yourself. Jesus is not in the picture. Back to what I was saying though. I was 1971. Okay. I'm watching television and a TV series come on, Kung Fu with David Carradine. You know, the original.
Sure, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And Master Po, the old monk. That Master Po for me was like, that got me into the Eastern philosophy. But there was one specific scene where Grasshopper comes out and he goes, which was David Carradine when he was little, he goes, Master, he goes, I saw, you know, whatever this child, this sorcerer killed this kid, I saw him and I ran away. He saw him. He says, I'm going to die now. So Master Po, who's blind, he says, come here, Grasshopper. And he goes, and he's sitting at a mirror with a candle. And he goes, look at the mirror. And he goes, he's looking. He goes, what do you see in the mirror? He goes, I see my reflection. He goes, is the mirror affected by how you feel or whatever it is? He goes, no, Master, it's a mirror. It's just reflecting my image. And he goes, when you encounter the evil, I don't know exactly how he said it, but when you encounter the evil, be the mirror and reflect it back to its source. You know what I mean? And I got right into the Eastern philosophy, but it's so true, you know? Yeah. And I found also that at 11 years old, you know, I'm going to this person's house and these people are talking all of this nonsense and stuff like that. And they would say to me, Miguel, you know, like in other words, kind of threatening me soft with this kind of stuff. I'm like, you know what, why don't you take that and do what you want with it? You know what I mean? I says that, and I wasn't even a Bible. I wasn't even into Jesus at that time, but just from the logic of it, of just be the mirror. Why are you attaching or committing to something that is outside of yourself? So I just rambled on there, but it's really so important again for the young people to have an understanding. It's like they're gonna build a house, but they don't have the blocks. Where are you building blocks? The classics.
And you brought up Christianity and Jesus, and I have a couple things to say about that. You know, I'm a Christian myself. Attend the Orthodox Church regularly. And one of the things I was really surprised to find is how much the Byzantine Christians or, you know, Eastern Christians love Plutarch. And they're actually the guys responsible for copying down his texts throughout the history so they don't, you know, get eaten by worms and forgotten for the ages. But there's this, I found this poem. So this Byzantine poet scholar prays for two pagans. Like, you know, there's always this question for Christians. Okay, what happened to the pagans who hadn't heard of Christ but were still noble, like Plato and Aristotle? But he says, I'm translating from the Greek here. If any of the heathen, O my Christ, you might from condemnation deign to save, then rescue Plato, please, and Plutarch too.
Okay.
For likewise in their doctrine and in morals, both men to your commandments are allied. And true, though neither know you to be God, yet all that's needed is your holy grace, which saves the rest of our unworthy lot. And so Plutarch has been admired, and I think he gives you a way of admiring these great moral exemplars from antiquity, who were maybe of a different religious tradition, but like so many of the points of wisdom, like as you've been pointing out, they're perennial. They're common. Like it's about human nature. Like that's why I can read the Tao and be like, oh, this is it's totally spot on. I love that passage from the Tao. Like the best athlete wants his opponent to be at his best, you know, like so many little lines like that. Just that could have been said by Achilles, you know? But I think that one of the geniuses of Plutarch in particular, I keep kind of ragging on him because I gotta get
into Plutarch now. You got
ease yourself in with the Cost of Glory podcast.
Okay, we'll do. I'll subscribe.
Well, because what I'm trying to do is just retell the lie. Because so I had this problem as a side note, and then I'll get to Jesus in a sec. But you know, when I was an academic, I was preparing for a lecture one time, and I found Plutarch's Lives in audiobook form. And I was like, oh, this would be great. I can prepare for my lecture on the Gracchi brothers or whatever it was by just listening to Plutarch, and I won't have to read it all, you know, be able to do the laundry.
You mean historical figure? You would learn about a historical figure through listening to Plutarch.
Yeah, like I would, you know, you want to read the primary sources as a historian before you prepare a lecture. And so I'm like, oh, this is great. This is convenient. Primary sources right there in translation. And I just couldn't do it. It's just too dense to listen to in audio format. You got to kind of sit down and read it. It's not hard, but, you know, you'll have to look up references. You'll have to page back a few pages to say, oh, wait, who is this guy again? And, you know, it just takes a little bit. It's very rewarding, but it takes a little effort. And so what I try to do on the Cost of Glory podcast is just tell the stories in a audio friendly form, kind of updated. So that you can just kind of enjoy them, but dramatic, and I put some music in. But anyway, so I think one of the great insights of biography in particular, and Plutarch talks about this in the biography of Alexander, what you're really after is understanding virtue and vice, and that can be revealed to you in like an offhand saying that somebody makes as they're walking into a restaurant just as easily as by a battle in which thousands of men die. Like sometimes it's the little things that show you more character than the big things. And so
100%.
And you see this in the Gospels too, right? Like, cause Jesus is depicted doing these great kind of showing these great feats of character and intelligence, doing the jujitsu with the Pharisees, like verbal jujitsu against the Pharisees and healing people. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, this is illustrated in a way by like the way that as a Christian, that God decided to give the ultimate message to mankind, not by revealing a speech in the prophets that was really important, but by embodying something, by coming down and showing what it was for everything that he stood for, that he was about to be in a person, a life
embodied.
And it had to be from the beginning to the end, all the way from birth to death. You have to know the whole story of how it ends. And that was the most powerful message ever delivered to mankind, a life told, shared through the Gospels, through the word of mouth of the early preachers.
Mm-hmm. We really need that now because, like, it's a godless society. You know, it's funny, but I get into it with different people in different conversations, and then people say, oh, no, everybody that's a Muslim is going to burn in hell, and if you're a Taoist. And I'm like, in my opinion, you can't. First of all, did you create that man? You don't know. Like, God reads your heart. And it's important because, like I said, if you don't have an understanding of what absolute truth is, right? Because when you're talking absolute truth, you're talking God. So I don't care where you are, you need to get an alignment. We're speaking about Jesus. You with the Most High. You have to have that alignment with the Most High, and then you start from there because. In the book of Job, it said, where were you? Or do you know the way of a serpent on a stone or an eagle? You know that path. And it's like, it blew me away. I'm like, what do we know, right? We breathe, we drink water, we eat, you know, we play basketball. But what do we know, like, in that context? So first you have to align yourself with with the Supreme, whatever your religion is. Yes, I think that you should go through, you know, through Jesus and everything like that. But we'll put that to the side because that's not my thing. That's not what I do. I have to worry about myself and the steps I have to take for myself. But it's just, I'll give you an example. I remember when I first put out my podcast and I went on Reddit, which you could take it or leave it for what it is, because there's some really good stuff on there. Really good nerds on Reddit. But check this out. So I says, oh, I just started a podcast, Alpha Male Buddhist, and all that stuff like that. And my whole thing with the Alpha Male Buddhist is I got tired of seeing feminized men. Mm-hmm. And if you're that way, that's fine. If you choose to, that's fine. But listen to a man speak, you know, like what he has to say. So it's the alpha, but I said, that's kind of strong though. And then Buddhist, you know, so I'm like, it's the yin and yang. But I'm on Reddit and I says, I just started this podcast. I kept my thread. I almost lost it. And I'm on Reddit. I'm like, I started this podcast, Alpha Male Buddhist. And you know what the emails I got back? Oh, Alpha Male, do you beat your wife and stuff like that? And I never went back into Reddit again. I'll go in to find stuff. But we've lost, you got the divine masculine and the divine feminine. And when you combine them, you get expression of God's plan for mankind. In other words, that's the natural course of what. Again, if you're gay, whatever you say, you know, that's your life, man. If you're my friend and I see you, I say, hi, how you doing? Just don't kind of put that on me or whatever. Don't put me in an awkward position. But I have nothing against any people, but
all due respect to Reddit, I do feel like it over-indexes a little bit on the divine feminine, so to speak.
I don't know. You know, I haven't been there in years. Does it really? I don't know. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I just got it. It took a second.
It's, I don't know. I have had similar results there. There's a lot of smart people, but then there's a lot of retards too. Excuse the expression.
You know, another way of looking at it, because you mentioned villages. Let's take it back. I had used this analogy with Miyamoto Musashi, the Book of Five Rings, right?
Mm.
And if you know his story, he killed 60 men by the time he, you know, did you read you know about him or a little bit?
I know the outlines, but I know it's on my list. So, amazing stuff.
Yeah, man. And I draw a lot of similarities to the Greeks with them in my way. I don't know. But it's Musashi, like, I don't, again, when I read him, I said to myself, Where was all of this information? You know what I'm saying? This is something that I need. When he said to know the way in one way is to know it in 1,000 ways.
Mm.
But we've lost that. Right now, people, they look and they say, you know, my smartphone, I have likes, right? I have some likes over here. I have a meme that, which memes are cool. Don't get me wrong. I have a meme over here. But what are you about, dude? What have you done, man? You know, oh, I've studied and I've got this. Great. Then what you have of that study, share that. But everybody today is all, you know, it's not only about themselves, but they want to make you look bad to make themselves look good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Prove you wrong to make themselves look right. Even though I'm not bringing out a point or enriching or edifying anybody, I need to make you look bad or make you look stupid just to make myself look better. Which to me, here's what I was saying, the whole village. When Musashi, you know, at that time with the shoguns and everything like that, I did a podcast on him. The threat came back. I did a podcast on him and I said, somebody said, oh, you know, so-and-so when he was a bloody man. But here's the thing, in those times, if you were especially in feudal Japan, if you were in this village and there's a village on the other way and there's a mountain pass between you, there's going to come a nice sunny day where that shogun is going to say, you know what? We can go over that pass and annihilate that village, right? So now me on the village that's going to get wiped out, I'm going to sit there and say, well, what about my feelings? What? No, dude, learn how to wield a samurai sword. Learn strategy. That's what they call sword fighting. It's called strategy. If you want to take over this society, the real resistance you're going to get is from the European. And when I say European man, it doesn't matter what country, whatever, but you know what we're talking about. That is the challenge. And before they can do anything there, they have to marginalize him, put him in a position where he's bad. He's mm-hmm. bad, and what he's bringing to the table is bad, and he's a colonizer. Come on, man. Yeah. You know what you do? You sit at the table and speak. First of all, you judge people on an individual basis, obviously. And secondly, look at the authors, look at their movies, look at their books. Look at Socrates, man. Okay, let's start there. That's your world, you know? Wow, dude, I need to know more about that, as opposed to this whole attack on Western civilization. And you know, you really have to sit and think about it, because if you don't have the right perspective or know how to look at these issues and connect them together, you'll think I'm crazy, right? I know you know what I'm saying. And that's what we need, people to be able to be in, especially young men, to get up here and see exactly what's going on. And I've been down in South Carolina now for 2 years now, moved from Brooklyn to Jersey and now South Carolina. And it's a different world down here. And anybody that's listening, or whatever listeners here, this is the Greenville area of South Carolina. It's nice down here, man. This is the world that I remember back in the 70s, you know, mm-hmm. when people just say hi for no reason. I thought people were great. They're saying hi to me, and I'm like, hi, how you doing? But I'm like, why did you say hi? You know, and it's, I'll tell you, man, it's really nice down here, man. You know, I like it. But if you're not here, you're not going to understand what I'm talking about. But I'm going to take it back to where it was, the attack on white men. Like, what is that about, man? And why is it that, how can I explain this? I believe in meritocracy, and I'll leave it at that. You know what I'm saying? I believe in meritocracy, and I believe you need to earn where you're going. And if you want respect, you have to deserve that respect. You just don't get respect. Something that has to be earned, and earned in the sense of, well, okay, I got this from you, or I got that from you, or I learned how to do whatever. And now, yeah, you're going to get my respect because of what you did, not because of a label that was put on you, you know? But I kind of ramble. I apologize, but
no, it's
what I do a lot is integrating a lot of different things so that you can see the same thing from five different angles. You know, that's one mm-hmm. thing, you know, people, when they email me, they kind of like what I do with that. But tell me what you think really would be the right space, or your feeling of what's going on with young men today all over the world.
Well, I think that one of the great psyops that I see very operative in America is making people feel like the Greeks and the Romans are not theirs, you know, that. But I think if you speak English as either as your native tongue or as like the, you know, the language that you do life in, this is your like mental machinery. And you're just like getting into the guts of how your brain actually works. Like if you speak English, this is kind of the world you inhabit. It's the one that the Greeks and Romans founded. And it goes for really any European language.
It's your like, operating system.
It's your operating system.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, because we have gotten into this mindset of like, well, the Greeks are white guys or something, which
badass white guys.
Yeah, which they were. They're yours too if you speak English. It's like this is right. If you're an American, if you're a kind of quasi, if you're a Westerner in any sense,
right.
You know, anywhere west of the Ural Mountains and north of the Sahara Desert, like,
or if you can relate to that,
yeah, or even if you could just relate to it, you could claim them for your own.
That's right. Why not?
You know, we read Eastern philosophy and love it. So, and one of the things it does is I think you start to see wisdom in other places that you could have found in your own tradition if you had been shown where it is. Now, there's a ton you can learn from studying the Japanese and Musashi. I think the closest equivalent that you get to Japan is Sparta.
I was going to just say that.
Because you have a whole society maniacally dedicated to perfecting a certain kind of human excellence. Right. The kind of excellence that says nobody's going to take over us. Nobody's going to like come over that valley and beat us. We're going to be ready. And you know, great stories of Japan doing that against the West. There's, you know, the kamikaze wind when was it the Chinese trying to invade Japan? But the great Spartan story of that is the Battle of Thermopylae at when the Persians try to invade. And So I've done a couple of biographies.
Themistocles.
Yeah, Themistocles is the Athenian who sort of engineers the strategy.
Genius. And,
yeah, incredible genius. And this is one of these great stories of like two great rivals teaming up to defeat an even greater rival. You know, Athens and Sparta are always like jockeying for who's the best. And in the Persian Wars, they join forces and the result is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonidas, of course, and the story of the 300. But like, so one of the series I did in my show was on Lysander, who's this general of Sparta who ends up defeating the Athenians. And the kind of tragic aftermath of the Battle of Thermopylae or the whole Persian Wars is that after the Persian threat is gone, the Greeks then turn their spears upon each other. It takes a couple of generations.
They always did for some reason, but whatever.
Yeah. It's sort of like who they are. There's these super alpha macho guys and they're you know, quarreling amongst themselves, kind of like you see in the Iliad. It's like part of their way of life almost. But I think studying the lives of great Spartan commanders is a great window into that whole mindset. Like we don't study the life of Lysander. We don't study the life of Lycurgus, who's the Spartan state founder. This is a text that Alexander Hamilton. So in a war for American independence, there's this great, horrible winter that they spend early on in the war, the winter at Valley Forge. Washington's trying to keep the men cheerful. They don't have food. They're wearing rags. It's bitter cold and everybody's miserable. And Alexander Hamilton's there like as a young guy. He's probably 24, 25, staff officer for Washington, writing letters, trying to get the Continental Congress to send more money, send more food. What he does late into the night is he's a very ambitious, smart young man. He's reading Plutarch's Lives. Mm-hmm. He reads especially the life of Lycurgus, who's the state founder of Sparta. He's reading the life of Solon, who is the state founder of Athens.
I love those names, man. I love those names.
Yeah, I mean they're great resonant names. And he's taking notes. We actually have his paybook so he's like gotten free pages in his like account books as a, you know, staff officer. And he's taking 50 pages of notes, most of them on Plutarch's Lives. And, you know, because he's thinking, when we win this war, not if, when we win this war,
right,
because I'm going to make it happen, we're going to need to come up with a new constitution. So we better learn from the greats. And so this is part of our DNA as Americans, I think.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we ended up not doing a Spartan constitution or an Athenian constitution per se, more of a Roman constitution, a Roman Republic kind of constitution, mm-hmm. where you have Senate and people and consuls who are the presidents and a balance of powers. I think we need to get back to these ancient roots that have informed our wisdom tradition that we've kind of lost touch with because it was excised like a tumor by the cultural Marxists. to make a long story short.
It's like, it's a war, but we don't realize we're at war. You know, again, and I'm saying it, you know.
I find this very motivating, you know, like men find war motivating and we are at war. And like the way to fight the war is to not let yourself be conquered, to conquer yourself first by educating yourself and to engage
with yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
And then once, because, you know, how are you going to lead men if you can't lead yourself? Obviously, you know, cliche, right, but it's true. Engage with yourself first. And then from there, pattern recognition, timing of what's going on, and saying to yourself, well, you know, they're trying to kill us all. You know what I mean? and I'm not even going to say any words. I'm not going to say any, you know, this, none of that. It just is what it is. But, you know, I'm almost out of words. It's like, it comes natural to you, you know, and it did as a youth. You know, you were reading the classics and you were kind of enriching yourself, you know, because it's what you chose to do, right? I have a question for you. And a PhD would be a good person to ask this. And it's kind of nature nurture, but why is it that, young men today. Let's take your typical guy sitting on a beanbag, naked, eating Cheetos, playing video games, crying, right? Let's take that guy. I'm sorry, but conceivably sitting in his own piss. He may not be in his own piss, but that guy. And then you'll get some young guy out there that he goes to the gym. He learns he can box, or he learns he can run with a foot. And then he does great for us. What? Is there no hope for the guy on the beanbag? Like, again, nature, nurture. Like, what is that?
Yeah, it's hard. I look.
Not have a chance, not have a hope. I mean,
I look at that guy and sometimes I wonder if that could have been me if I had, you know.
Could have been any of us. Yeah. It could have been any of us.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, kind of reminds me of what Polybius said about the Romans, you know, after the Battle of Cannae, when they just get annihilated, 80,000 Romans or something.
Crazy.
The Romans are most dangerous when they are in extreme peril, you know? I think men can be the most dangerous when they really have their back against the wall. And there have been a couple of moments in my life where I had my back against the wall and it was like sink or swim. And I think that, you know, sometimes you have to get in that place. Maybe you hit rock bottom. I think of the great Roman rebel Sertorius, that I started my podcast with, who's ends up on the losing end of the Civil War. And he flees to Spain and he holds this resistance out for 10 years. He makes a rival state. And to me, his story is a story of the incredible power of the will to survive and to continue on. And so much of, you know, Paul Graham, the great Y Combinator leader and founder, talks about so much of what makes a business successful is staying alive, is staying in the game. And there's a kind of like, if you get in yourself in the position where you just realize the stakes that I might die like this as a loser, that should inject some fear into you, and you just got to work at it, and it's going to be a struggle. But clawing yourself out might take a while, but it's about staying alive in that game of clawing yourself out.
Here's what it is, though. It's like that guy. I bring that up a lot in my the guy in the beanbag. You know, when they hear me, they go, "Okay, the guy in the beanbag." They can picture it, but. Yeah. He's being fed so much garbage, so much brainwashing, so much indoctrination with the whole Yuri Bezmenov and the whole, you know, the whole Yuri Bezmenov and that whole takes 5 years. Right. That
demoralization.
There you go. But I still think, because like I said, I grew up kind of hard without a dad and all that stuff, but I still think that God put it within us, within our DNA or whatever it is, to be able to recognize the threat and then eliminate or deal with the threat innately within us. So the guy, again, on the beanbag, and he's like at level 15 in Grand Theft Auto, right? He's there, looks around, and then he sees his best friend across the street who's rocking it. You know, he's got a new car, and he's 22 years old, and you hadn't mentioned that earlier, you know, by seeing other, there was a reference you made that when you look at other people and then you recognize it, right? So I think to myself, he doesn't have an excuse, that guy, because he should innately know that he's on the wrong path, A, and B, as an individual on the wrong path, B, his people are on the wrong path. Now, when you go to Twitter or X, a lot of these people are just realizing and saying, hey, wait a minute, we have an issue, and that's the enemy. Okay, you have to, the 99% of it is identifying the enemy or the challenge or whatever word you want to put on it. You know, the restricting force. I'm trying to be real nice here, if you can read between the lines. Mm-hmm. But it's recognizing that. But, and I'll get into it, like you get people that they get into the porn addiction, which is a really bad one. I just did a meme on that and I put it on Twitter. My handle is Alpha Male Buddhist, but you can put this on your podcast too if you want to mirror it, you know, that's fine. But we're being subjected to like a heavy, heavy duty, heavy psychological warfare going, you know, the Freudian stuff. And what's that guy with the marketing, was the nephew of Freud.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Bernays.
It, yeah.
And then there was another one too. Whatever. Also a relative of Freud, but whatever they're doing, it's working on you. But yet, do you consider yourself, and I'm going to go quasi-Greek on you here or whatever, but do you consider yourself a man? Do you consider yourself the head of your household? If so, what are you doing, dude? Like, why are you not pursuing that? See, I'm of the belief that, you know, when I was 14 years old, I started looking up homes in Staten Island. I grew up in Brooklyn. The houses in Staten Island were cheaper. I wasn't buying a house. But I would get the Sunday paper. There was no internet then. I would get the Sunday paper and look and say, oh, wow, you can get a house for $160,000 in Staten Island. I wasn't even buying, but I'm looking because I know I'm going to get married. I got married at 24. I got married very young. But I know that I'm going to be a husband. I'm going to be a provider. I'm going to be a father. And am I ready for that? What am I doing now to be ready for that then? I had started reading Eastern philosophy at this time. And they're very big on the family and the whole, you know, the whole, just like the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, so what innately it's within you to want to do that. So what is it that young people are thinking about today? I think a big thing that they put in place is the whole masculine feminine where you can't, and I'm getting to this lately. They have broken that apart so that they break up the natural order of life, which is a man and a woman, and they have kids, and they, because at the end of the day, that's really what it's about, perpetuating or, you know, perpetuating life on the planet. And something that innate, something that deep within our DNA, deep within us, has been removed, where people don't even recognize that that's an issue. They're not thinking in terms of, one day I need to buy a house. What's a nice, I'm here in Greenville. I was researching this shit 15 years ago. While I was still, I retired 2 years ago, but I was researching and I wanted to do Charlotte, but I said, no, Charlotte's going on. And then Rock Hill, are you familiar with South Carolina?
I've been once or twice, yeah.
Yeah. So I says, you know, for some reason, this Greenville place, but again, I'm engaged, you know, and I'm trying to figure out my path and what's the best thing for me and my family. Whereas today, the kid wants to get a level 16 on Grand Theft Auto. What is that about? And I'm not asking, I'm just saying rhetorically, you know, why not get back to the classics, man? You know, why not get back to even Sisyphus, you know, the dude pushing the stone. You know, if you look at that in the right way, it's going to give you a whole story, man. Now, you could say, yeah, he's stupid because, you know, he's pushing this and it keeps coming back on him. But at the same time, go mess with that guy and see how strong he is. So there's a double edge to it. And that's what you get from the classics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I think if probably the people who are listening to this show don't need this because they've already kind of started to wake up. But I think for me, one of the great kind of hacks for getting yourself up off the couch is the fad.
The
beanbag, excuse me.
Yeah.
the piss-soaked beanbag. is fasting, actually. It's a stupid hack, but like if you just wait until dinner time to eat just a couple times a week, or even just wait till lunch. Like, I feel that if you want to jumpstart your like hunger to achieve, you just get hungry for food and you'd be surprised at what it does to your psyche to like motivate you.
Uh-huh.
That's something that I, you know, when I've been low in life, has actually kind of picked me up.
Do you do the 18 hour or like
I'll do 18 hours. I'll do, you know, 3 or 4 days.
Without eating at all? Or?
Yeah. Drinking really? Water. I'll do, but you know, I had breakfast this morning. So, I mean, it's not like I have a habit that I do all the time, but yeah, even if you just, you know, wait till lunch or wait till dinner, right, that can have a strong mental effect on you. And, just like make you unsatisfied with your circumstances and want to go and do something. So something to try.
And what I see with the fasting is very, very interesting that you say that, because it's a discipline. It's control over the outcome of your existence over the outcome. I'm here, I'm hungry, but I'm not eating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making this, it's a choice, right?
Right.
I'm not eating, I'm hungry. And you could be a big man, I'm so hungry. No, dude, you go eat. I'm not. And mm-hmm. then we'll come back in a few weeks and see who's where. I didn't think of it, but the fasting, I started doing that intermittent fasting. It's funny you bring it up. Like 3 weeks ago, and I dropped about 14 pounds.
Yeah.
My joints used to hurt. My back, it's the sugar that kills
me. Yeah, yeah. It's great for inflammation.
It's funny you say intermittent fasting. It's funny. But yeah, I just started doing that. And that's, people listening, man, really do. Listen to him, Alex, because he hits the nail on the head with that and with the classics and everything. I don't know. I don't want to hold you. I don't know how long you want. I'll sit here. I'm retired. I'll talk forever. So you be the one that decides when we cut off. And again, I'll edit. You can send me the MP3 and I'll edit it. And you know,
cool.
These parts of it I'll take out. But yeah.
Yeah, I should probably run soon. But maybe we can have like one kicker question or comment, and
we could do this again also. So
yeah, totally.
Part three. Question for you. Okay. Let's say we have the guy on the beanbag, right? And he's got the controller in the hands, and he's got the Cheetos orange stuff dust on the fingertips, right? When he wipes that, don't laugh. When he wipes that dust, Cheetos dust off his fingertips, how does he acquaint himself or initiate himself? I like the word initiate. Himself into the classics, and more specifically into the Greek classics. You say you had mentioned a few authors and stuff like that. How you know Plutarch? How would he go about in baby steps getting into this discipline, this teaching?
Well, I think I would recommend starting with a character that you're curious about. Everybody, at least if you listen to this podcast, you've heard of Alexander the Great.
You've heard of
Julius Caesar. Mm-hmm. You might have heard of Fabius Maximus, you know, on your Hannibal when you did that series where you looked at Dan Carlin's series on Hannibal. Fabius Maximus is a general that kind of defeated Hannibal in Italy. He's a character in Plutarch's Lives. Marcellus is another character who fought against Hannibal. Find one of these figures in Plutarch and just go find the book. I've got a blog post on my Substack, how to read all of Plutarch's Lives. I think it's on my website, costofglory.com.
Now, what is your website? Give me the whole, yeah.
Yeah, costofglory.com is my website. I've got Plutarch's Lives tab on there. It's also on my Substack. But, you know, you can find these editions on, on Amazon or in a Barnes & Noble. Penguin editions of Plutarch are fine. I go have a whole rundown of the various editions.
I get into that too.
It's a big book, so it's hard to find them all in one place, and you don't necessarily need to, but you want to find a translation that's not going to be like awkward mm-hmm. and distracting. And just go and like see how you feel it. What I try to do is write out quotes that you find right in your book, you know, write out a passage, put it on a note card. Turn it into something that you revisit the next day. Memorize a couple of key quotes, whether it's Plutarch or actually quotes from the guy that he's doing a biography of. And just think on that and then move on to the next.
Okay, and one other thing. Was Diogenes crazy?
Well, maybe he was the most sane man of all.
And what was that whole thing with Alexander the Great? He said, Well, you know that you're the
yeah. Well, yeah. Alexander is a great place to start because it has that story of Diogenes. So Diogenes is the Cynic philosopher, the founder of the school of Cynic philosophy, and he lives in Corinth, just near Athens,
in a barrel, in a tub, or a barrel,
depending on how you translate it. He has no shame. He says that the true happiness of man is to live in. Completely in accordance with nature, and then look at the dog.
Alexander comes to him, and then he says something to him. Diogenes says something to Alexander, which is
So Alexander comes; he wants to see the famous Diogenes, who defecates in public and pees in plain sight, and just wears rags and lives in a barrel, but it seems to be the smartest guy in town. And Alexander says he's in Corinth, says, I'd like to visit Diogenes. And they say, oh, yes, right this way, sir. You know, he comes up to Diogenes and he says, Diogenes, your reputation precedes you. Mm-hmm. Ask me any favor and I will grant it. And Diogenes says, could you move a little bit out of the way? You're in my sun. You're cramping my style. And Alexander is sort of astonished that this philosopher kind of rebuffs him. He says, I don't need anything. You don't have anything to give me.
Yeah, philosopher bum. Yeah.
Yeah, this philosopher bum, this like hobo, doesn't need anything from me. It's kind of like kind of frustrating.
Alexander says, I were not Alexander the Great, I would be Diogenes. That blew me away. I was like, dude, because you got the both worlds right there. You got the most powerful man in the world and a guy that sleeps in a barrel.
Yeah.
But see, this
And then you know Diogenes' response. He says, if I were not Diogenes, I would be Diogenes.
Okay, yeah. Well, look, on that note...
The last word.
Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on here, and I would definitely like to do this again.
Miguel, it's been a great pleasure. Yeah, I appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that listeners can really get a lot from listening to this episode, from going on to your content and checking out what you have out there, the classics, and so important, man, in the time that we're in right now. So Alex, I want to thank you for bringing these teachings out to the front, and you know, it's really something that's very needed right now. And I want to thank everybody for listening, and we're going to definitely be doing this again. And
I've got one thing to offer, you know, since we talked a little bit about public speaking and these retreats that I run. And there's a little known fact is that the study of the classics in Western civilization was always linked with the art of becoming a great public speaker, becoming an orator. And so I've actually put together a gift for your audience if they're interested. I if you go to costofglory.com/gift, you can find it there. I have an authoritative speaker's guide. It's free. And it's like an email course where I take you through how you can use the ancient classics to become a better speaker, a better communicator, a better kind of leader, public presence. And so you can get that costofglory.com/gift. You just put in your email address and it'll send it to you. So check that out too.
Welcome to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. I like to cover topics from ancient history, great leaders and generals from the past, and I also like to talk about self-realization, truth, critical thinking, and strategic spirituality. Outside the box, nonconformist. I'm here to shatter the myths of the mainstream media and the beta sheeple narrative. I do want to thank you guys for listening. Praise Yeshua HaMashiach's name. Praise Jesus Christ's name. My Linktree is Alpha Male Buddhist Pod. Links are in the show note descriptions of this episode below. There in my Linktree, you will find links to my Instagram, Telegram, Rumble, Odyssey, Twitter, and my free episode archives. If you're a new listener, I have also included links to my top-rated episodes. These are specific episodes of the podcast that are the most popular and listeners have given me the most positive feedback on. Some of these episodes are also in video format, so you can not only listen to the episode, but you can watch the accompanying video to that episode. Also, contact me for my free Academy of Liberation handbook, which is in PDF format, along with a free audiobook version of the handbook. So check out the show notes below of this episode for all of my content links. This podcast is hosted on the Podbean platform, so my website there is alphamalebuddhist.podbean.com.